Hey, Artpreneurs. We've got a mini episode for you today recorded during George's weekly office hours where he invites listeners to hang out on Zoom. Check the show notes or go to our website to join our Slack group and get notified about the next office hour. In this episode, George's former student, Joseph Kiefer, asks about press and playlisting for a new artist and how to start getting attention. We also talk about cold emailing industry professionals and building personas. Enjoy the episode and see you on Slack.
So, Joseph, what can I help you with, man? You're a great student, and I appreciate you supporting us as we build this little ENA community.
But yeah, I've been loving the podcast.
Tell your friends.
It's really great.
Nice to be here. Good. So, what are you working on?
A couple things. I'm working with a recent Berkeley grad. Sort of like a some manager thing, and we had like a 3-month release campaign planned out for the summer, but that was put on hold with COVID and everything that's happening with Black Lives Matters, and it was just not the time to be releasing music. But I think we still have to, you know, sooner or later release it. I wanted to ask if you thought that for an artist that's basically launching his career now in a time that there are no live shows, if it was worth it to invest in sort of like a PR company that could help with press and playlisting, because that's really the only thing that can be done right now. Like, I've been trying to prepare a live stream show with him, but it's also hard because he doesn't have his band, so he has to use tracks, and the tracks are kind of, you know, it's just not the same. It doesn't translate the same way. So,
I mean, I'm never. I think the quickest way to just, you know, I don't know if it's faster to pay a publicist or just set your money on fire, but the end result will be the same. So no, I wouldn't go that route for a bunch of reasons. One, you know, publicists are mercenary, and they'll like your music and advocate for your music or whoever, just so long as you're paying them. And then the moment you're not, and what they have that you want are, in theory, at least, relationships to people that you can't yet get to. And I would just really, really encourage you to begin building the relationships with the people who you think will provide coverage for your artist directly. There's no reason not to, right? Because, I mean, the thing that publicists kind of cherish beyond all other things is their Rolodex. But you can build that too. And in fact, I'd say that, like, I know for me, and I'm not really a journalist, but in terms of like writing, I'll pay attention when some publicist reaches out to me, but I'll pay a lot more attention when it's the artist directly or the manager, just by orders of magnitude, you know? Mm-hmm. You need to like figure out like who are the writers that you feel, if they covered your artist's work, would move the needle in terms of awareness. Everybody's so easy to find now. Like back in the day, like you had to have publicists because you needed a phone number, right? Like there wasn't email, there wasn't social. You like literally, if you didn't have this person's phone number, And it was also like the tradition was different. I'll never forget. I can still kind of feel the pain. I think it was Chris Gow. Robert Chris Gow is the he calls himself the dean of rock critics, and he invented the Paz and Jop poll on the Village Voice. And so like he's this sort of like seminal rock critic. And back when I first started my label, somehow or another, somebody gave me his number, right? So, and it was like getting the code to the bunker and Lost. Like, it was really hard to come by. But somehow or another, I got it. And I called him up, and he no shit yelled at me for like a half an hour. Like, how did you get this number? Who gave me? And I wasn't going to tell the, you know, and that, but now, like, you can follow Chris Gow and direct message him on, you know, and you can, yeah, it's, and so, and he knows that too. And so all these people that, that had kind of power through scarcity, and the relationship with the publicist was really to keep little twerps like me from calling them in the middle of the night or whenever it was I called them. That's gone, you know? And so, so along with it kind of comes the power that the publicist had. And I learned, so, I mean, I learned from that lesson, and I really, I eventually ended up as the way that things typically end up, like now, you know, I mean, he yelled at me for a while. I was like, oh, dude, I'm sorry, you know, but he liked my music. And then we had a rapport, and then I was able to just go directly to him, and I didn't take advantage of it. And I built that type of relationship with a handful. Like I can email Ben Cesario anytime now from the New York Times. It's not to say he'll write about something, but that's just a relationship that I've kind of curated over the years. And guess what he does? He calls me up when he needs a quote from someone about something, you know, and I would way rather have you begin to develop your kind of brand equity for you with these people than just sort of paying someone for, and I know it's sort of a metaphor for the music business generally. Like we want to be able to just sort of focus on the art or whatever, and then hire someone to do X, Y, and Z for us. It's a mindset that has to change. Dan talks about kind of the musicians thinking of themselves as new media entrepreneurs. So if I'm an entrepreneur, I am an entrepreneur, but like if I'm doing something that's not music related, like I've got some new iPhone case or something that I'm making, I sure as shit am not hiring a publicist to get in front of the reviewers at TechCrunch or whatever. You know, like I'm just going to reach out. Hey, I'm an entrepreneur. And musicians, for whatever reason, don't do that. They have this weird kind of faux shyness, or they feel like it's somehow beneath them. And I think we need to change that mindset. And I know it seems intimidating and hard, but like if you sit and make a list of, these are the people that we believe are the publications that would move the needle on this artist. And then kind of look on Twitter, look on Instagram, follow them. Like first, like get to know them, get to like, I hated it when I was running the label, when I would get an unsolicited demo from someone that clearly had just bought a book. And there used to be these books that would have labels, addresses and stuff. So I just get mountains of unsolicited demos, and like we weren't like a terribly specific, like we released a lot of different genres and things, but we didn't put out like death metal, and we didn't put out smooth jazz and stuff, and so like anyone that knew anything about the label would never send death metal, you know, and yet I would get that, and it was clearly just a carpet bombing of sending stuff out to labels. And it's the same way with me as a writer. Like if I get some pitch on like, oh, George, do you want to cover this lampshade or something? It's like, no, like why? Like you just went through, you know, but if somebody takes the time and it's like, okay, I've got some blockchain startup or I'm a musician kind of entrepreneur, like it means something to me that they've taken the time to read my shit and then try to build a rapport with me. And publicists don't do that. Publicists, it's much more about, okay, we're just going to carpet bomb like everyone and hope. It's spray and pray. And that's the wrong approach. So, and the other thing that you have going for you, Joseph, right now that you're going to lose in the next, when do you graduate?
In May.
So yeah. in a year, you're going to lose the ability to reach out to people in the industry under the cover of student. And it's a powerful thing. If I get an email from someone, not one of my students, but just some, you know, whoever, that, hey, I'm a student at Which and Which, and you can use my name all the time. Like, you can be like, I'm George Howard student at Berkeley, and he assigned me some jive ass assignment that I have to go contact people. The willingness and likelihood of most people that have a shred of decency to respond to a student asking for help is much, much higher than, hey, I'm a manager or I'm an artist, review my shit. So, like, use that to your, and I mean that in the right way of the word, like take advantage of this moment. And again, feel free to be like, I'm a student at Berkeley. George Howard assigned me this, because it's true. Like, I mean, I want you to be talking to managers, to publicists, to whomever. You'll have so much higher impact there than paying some publicist X number of thousands of dollars. And I'm Carly Dan, if you want to chime in.
That's one of my biggest regrets, not doing more of that kind of cold emailing as a student. Because as soon as you graduate, it goes from, I'm a student that wants to learn, to I'm someone that just graduated and needs a job, which is like negative. And they don't want to talk with you because they probably get hit up about job opportunities all the time. So I think George is right. And with PR, I'm far from an expert in PR, but I like to think of it as, what could I do that would earn media? Even if at the end of the day, you're still going to connect with a journalist, you know, like you doing the outreach rather than them coming to you, still do something that would earn you media, something that is remarkable. Otherwise, it's, why should someone listen to your artist's music compared to literally any other artist on Spotify, right? There has to be something there that is a differentiator.
I think there's been a shift in the last like 10 years or so where there were so many PR companies and agencies and publicists, and then that kind of like trickled and went away. And a lot of companies that were using agencies, I think, also experienced the kind of overall sentiment that George is expressing. It's like when you apply for a job and you send out like just like the copy and paste cover letter, like there's nothing kind of personal. It doesn't feel like you've researched the company at all. And most companies just do their own PR in-house, any kind of PR efforts. And it is that kind of like crafted storytelling where you know the publication or the journalist that you hope to write about or to reach out to you. And those kind of like direct personal messages are so much more valuable. I think PR as a field is actually kind of a disappearing one because it is so easy to spend a lot of money and just who knows what the results will be. So if you can take the time to think like, I really like the bands that this particular journalist covers, and then write something. And even if you say like, I loved how you covered whatever and like mention the actual article name, like George is saying too, you know, if you say like, if you write someone or a publication that has nothing, has never covered anything like you're doing, it'll be obvious to them right away. Even if they would maybe be interested in your music or writing about you, it'll just feel like a stretch or just feel too impersonal. So if you take the time to think like, I'd love whatever, insert name here, insert publication, do your research, get to know what they write about, put some of that in your outreach, I think it's way more effective. And I do think that, I mean, it's a little bit of more, obviously, it's not a little bit, it's more of your time, but it's none of your money.
Yeah, and you're building enduring relationships that will serve you for a long time. The second part of your question about the playlisting, that's a real thing, right? And I think as we continue to define what the job of a label is or a manager, increasingly it is, well, we either have relationships as a label or money that we can get you X number of spins on Spotify that will then trigger an algorithm. That's a business decision, right? Like you're a smart enough guy. You can find those services out there that will get you those 100,000 spins or whatever. It will cost you several thousand dollars, right? You have to make the business decision. Is that what I want to do? And bear in mind, you're not getting fans at that point. What's happening?
That's key.
What's happening is they're sticking you on some playlist that already has, or playlists that already have a lot of subscribers. So they're not going to be value adding from like an ROI. Like if you always think about like customer acquisition costs and lifetime customer value, there's no relationship between the $5,000 or whatever you spend to get those listeners and then say, well, over time they will pay more than $5 each. It doesn't, there's no correlation. What there is this vague black boxy, like if you trigger the right algorithm by having enough spins on Spotify, it'll get put into another playlist that then can you get that flywheel going. It's a business decision. I mean, it's viable. But you have to look at that in the context of all of the other things that you can be doing or should be doing. But I can't, in good faith, say, yeah, just don't do that. But it has to be kind of part of the broader mosaic of all the other things.
Well, we can talk from experience without giving any names.
We should be careful about what we say, but go ahead.
Yeah, but speaking generally, for various artists and clients that I've worked with, we've spent lots of money on playlisting over the past years. And recently we had some big success. We don't know if it's because of the playlisting, but Spotify featured a song on several of their editorial playlists, including New Music Friday. And so even those where, and those are some of the best playlists we've been on because people actually save it and add the song to their libraries, it's still not transferring to actual fans. It's like this, they'll listen to it, they'll put it in their library. They're not following the artist on social media. Maybe a few of them are, but even though we reached, you know, 100,000 new listeners through that, it didn't turn into what we wanted it to.
It's very top of funnel, which is okay. So if you think about the marketing, you know, kind of funnel as like a martini glass or something like that, there is wisdom to, we're going to spray out in front of a lot of people, but only if you can then track to see which of those people kind of went from the awareness stage down to the consideration stage on the customer journey. It's like a billboard. Like if, you know, putting a billboard up does generate awareness. Tracking what percentage of people who saw that billboard went further down the funnel or to the right on the customer journey is almost impossible. But again, it can be a business decision where you say, all right, as a label, this is something we do for artists, right? We will spend the X number of dollars to get you Y number of plays. And then as the artist, they can go, okay, this is what my label's doing for me or my manager or whatever that I can't do myself. And then you have to think as the label, okay, maybe this helps us, maybe it doesn't. What else are we doing? What else, you know, what's the other strategy? Because it doesn't take a label to buy Spotify spins. Like again, just like with publicity, you can do that. You don't need a label until you reach a certain level of brand equity as a label where you have other artists that the DSPs want. So if I'm, I don't know who's signed to who anymore, but if I'm Universal and I've got a new Rihanna record that's poised to come out, I can go to Apple or Spotify or whatever and say, we'll give you a Rihanna exclusive if you feature this new artist for, you know, and barter with them. But that, I mean, that's pretty rarefied air. That's not something that independent labels or, so it's much more about the hustle, like I and kind of the mindset. And you're right. I mean, like it's harder today now without the live shows. But with every single artist I talk to at every level, and maybe they're just being kind of Pollyanna-ish about it, but they're all saying, well, but now I have the same tools with respect to live streaming. So I'd rather you be thinking about like, well, how can we make our live streams really unique and different? And how can we get 5, 10, 15, 20 people to show up and bring their friends for the next one? And what the world's lacking right now, in my opinion, more than anything else, is intimacy. We're lacking feelings of community and connections And you can replicate that in a digital space, but not the ways people are doing it now. But when you do, people look forward to it. People come back for more. People tell their friends. And it's a whole lot cheaper and a whole lot, you know, there are ways to look at live streaming compared to playing in a venue as live streaming being a lot more effective and a lot just efficient. So I'd rather you spend your time and your energy on that, because if you do that, you're looking at someone that wants to write about it. There are writers out there that want to tell the story, and I'm searching actively now. I mean, I've made certain limitations on my writing. I will not write about white male artists right now. That's just a personal choice. But I will write about artists who are not white male if they are doing things that are remarkable in the live streaming. And it can just be teeny little bits of remark. Wow, that's interesting. That's new. You're going to get a lot further, and you're a smart guy. Like you can write about it too. Like you should be blogging about or writing Medium posts or sending them to me or to us. We'll post them out there just about the journey. It's about people want to hear what a young, smart person who's passionate about music in the industry is doing during these times. It's a story that wants to be told, and way more impact from that than, hey, publicists will take your money. You won't be happy at the end, the other end of it.
Yeah, I guess like you were saying, like, it might be the quicker answer, but putting the time in to actually like reach out to the people that would have the biggest impact would also have the most benefits long term.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an answer. It's marketing theater. And there's a lot of that. There's a lot of marketing theater where people just sort of, well, we hired a publicist. We're, you know, okay, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of marketing theater, and you gotta kind of avoid it.
By hiring someone, you feel like the job is being done too. Like you kind of like hot potato it over to them.
Right.
It's not actually clear how hard they're working for you. You're one of many in their pool, and so you feel someone's on it, but you don't actually have any like control over it. You have no insights into it. And so it's like the job is, some people feel better hiring someone or putting money on it because then they feel like, okay, well, it's off my list. But it doesn't actually mean that it's an effective way to go about the actual task at hand. Mm. But what George just said too is so true. Like if you can get just 10 people, that's so much more valuable than blitzing like 1,000 publications and journalists. If you can get 10 people who are there and present and active and loving it, and then they then leave and say like, okay, you have to come to the next one, to their friends. I'm not sure if Dan is still there yet. He mentioned, I think in the last podcast, Julian Villard, that the artist who's been doing the live stream, and how it was a Friday night that he does it. And it was like
Friday night led.
Yeah, he felt, you are there. And how it was like the first time that he felt like he was actually kind of socializing in that online space. And so if you can actually achieve things like that, and like what George is saying, something even on the margin, something different, something remarkable, then that's going to be so much more valuable for you, even if it feels small at first. But the people who are engaged and who are actually benefiting from it, that in the end will be way more beneficial than just kind of a like copy paste press release type of
right.
Yep. What is your artist like outside of just their music?
Yeah. Good question.
Just personally?
Yeah.
I think wholesome is the best word I can come up
with. All right. Well, that's something. Wholesome out.
And just, I don't know. He's one of the most like hardworking people I know. We both went to 5 Week together in 2015, and he's 2 years older than me, so he started Berklee before I did. He couldn't pay for Berklee by himself or with help from his family, so he got a full tuition scholarship.
Nice.
He's been working as a sideman for every single group at Berklee, and then the last year, Stephanie Henning was like, well, why aren't you doing your own thing? And that's when we started working together on it.
Cool. Well, I mean, if he's been a sideman for a lot of gigs, then he's probably got a pretty deep musical background, and there's an educational aspect he could do to reach more people and aspiring musicians who could be part of his structure called most passionate percentile, if that's what connects with them. But also wholesome, you know, that makes me think of, you familiar with Ellen's sidekick Twitch?
Yeah.
He's like he's a dancer, kind of DJ on the Ellen show. His whole thing is being wholesome. He's a dancer and workout, but he does these live streams once a week where it's just like his family working out and dancing to music. And it's incredibly, it's family friendly. And it's his, there's tons of dancers on Instagram. There's tons of people that he could kind of be competing with, but because he's family oriented and wholesome, and that's he decided to really embrace that and be positive, that's like a differentiator for him, because he's there every week doing things to make families feel good, I guess. But you know, that's kind of vague, but that's a way to include personality into what you're doing beyond just this is a song that I'm putting out.
Right. I guess it's kind of like, I don't know if you saw, but Lizzo at some point during quarantine started doing like meditation sessions on Instagram Live. Like, yeah, it's everyone's doing that one thing, but it's just finding that little extra, I think. Yeah.
Purpose, not product. It's collisions. Yeah. I mean, wholesome is one of those. I mean, you remember from class when I was talking about the difference between justice and an avocado. Like, you say wholesome, I think of something that probably Dan and Carly think of differently. If you give me examples of how that wholesomeness manifests, then you can kind of get more specific. And then, yeah, I mean, see, you're smart. Like the Lizzo thing. That's right. Like that's notable. I mean, she's amazing, right? I mean, she's a remarkable artist in so many different ways. The fact that she too is letting her kind of purpose manifest itself into different products. It's all the same thing. What's your artist's name?
Leo Varela.
Is it a solo performer or?
He has a 4-piece band, but.
So what are you trying to brand, him or the band?
Him.
Does he have work out? Does he have stuff that's out there in the world already?
He has one single out. Yeah.
Yeah. And where is he based?
In Brazil, but he's moving to LA in January.
So he thinks.
Exactly.
Well, but so, I mean, already I'm interested, right? Like already some dude that's a good, I haven't heard Note One, but he's in Brazil doing, you know, he's been doing side man stuff or whatever. He wants to, like, I kind of want to hear his music. So Carly and Dan have been working on personas, and I would encourage you to kind of go through that exercise of like, well, what is it? Who are those most passionate percentile? What do they look like? And the good and the bad of it is that you're not constricted by geography at this point. And if he's getting out of Brazil, which maybe that's good, maybe that's bad. I mean, the axis tilting that sort of makes everybody just tumble to the West Coast, I don't understand. I mean, being a small fish in that gargantuan pond is a choice. But I don't know anything about Brazil except for, you know, but anyway, you're not geographically constrained, so it is really about psychographics and kind of personas and doing some experiments and some tests and getting more than one song out. I mean, that's not enough. Like you can't gauge anything, and I don't know. Yeah, Dan often talks about how consistency needs to be a KPI, doing things on a regular basis, and it takes a long time for people to even become aware of something, you know, and we've got so much stuff coming at us. But I think, you know, Carly and Dan's pieces are out there on the persona-based stuff. That would be where I'd start. I'd be like, let's start putting a profile together of who we think. You say he's hardworking. He should dive into this. He should love this. He should love this kind of collaboration. And he's really lucky to have somebody like you. I mean, you remind me so deeply of G-Eazy's manager, who was my student at Loyola, and he would do what you do. He would always be right kind of in the front of class and just be listening and wanting more, and doing things like showing up at office hours. And Gerald is an artist. You know, he's smarter than he makes himself out to be. But it was those two guys together just cooking things up. And the same advice that we are giving you is what I gave them back then, almost verbatim. Different universe, but they talked about signing to a label. I was like, why? They talked about hiring publicists. I was like, why? They took, you know, and look at where, you know, he's doing okay. So it can be done, and you're the right type of person to lead it. But I do think you have to get into that mindset of stopping looking for some externality, whether it's a publicist or a label or whatever, to kind of give you the keys of access. Mm-hmm. Instead, just build the fucking road yourself. It's really better.
Yeah. Appreciate it, George.
Appreciate you.
Really, really helpful.
The Entrepreneurship and Art Podcast is a GH Strategic production hosted by me, Carly Sheridan, Dan Cervantes, and George Howard. For more information and show notes, visit our website at entrepreneurshipandart.com.